Hysteria is brought to you by The Tamsin Show. What if midlife wasn't the end of the story, but the start of your strongest chapter? On The Tamsin Show, Emmy-winning journalist and New York Times bestselling author Tamsin Fadahl has the conversations too many women were never invited into. She's joined by powerhouse guests like Halle Berry and Stacey London, along with leading experts on dating in midlife, navigating divorce, and building real confidence for what comes next.
This isn't small talk. It's real talk, smart, unfiltered, and deeply relatable. Whether you're facing brain fog, hot flashes, or a total life reset, The Tamsin Show is your guide to clarity, strength, and connection as you move forward. New episodes drop every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts, because you shouldn't have to go through this in the dark, and you'll never have to ask, why didn't anyone tell me? Listen to The Tamsin Show. Your strongest chapter starts here.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan, and today, while Alyssa is taking a much-deserved week off, I'm joined by the incomparable Reshma Soojani, founder of Girls Who Code and Moms First. Reshma, over the weekend, thieves stole priceless jewelry pieces from the Louvre Museum in Paris, France. Why was this crime awesome?
It's so awesome because we're so used to corporations stealing from us, right? Like these CEO billionaires, you know, their entire bonuses essentially being the same amount of the entire wages that they pay their employees. So it was like refreshing to see some like dudes just pull off an old-fashioned burglary heist, manual labor.
Absolutely. You know what? I loved how analog it was. It was a ladder. I think some smashing implement. They did it during business hours, which was very respectful of them.
Very respectful. Very European.
Very European. It just sort of reminded me like all these classic ingredients just used with technique. It was like French food, right?
I loved it. It's so true. It's so true. And you know what else I loved about it? It was like work-life balance. Like only in France can you rob the Louvre in broad daylight at 9:30 a.m. So like these guys probably got up, had a cup of tea and a croissant, you know what I mean? Drove over there, you know, stole their shit, and then got on their eco-friendly scooters and just in time for lunch with a little bit of wine. I mean, so European.
Culture. Hashtag culture.
Yes.
On today's show, Reshma joins me to discuss Trump's toothless IVF plan. Who could have predicted that he would have made a promise that he had no intention of ever keeping? We also talk about RFK Jr., the science dunce, who is once again talking about teen boys' sperm for some reason. And then we get into why women are leaving the workforce to provide unpaid care. And then we've got Sani Petty. We've got family vacations and screen-obsessed museums. A really fun show for you. Stick around. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who don't think that 38-year-old men should be eligible to join the kids' club.
Certainly.
So, Reshma, we, you know, in the last week have had this kind of like ever-renewing stories plural now, of multiple group chats where quote-unquote young Republicans were acting terrible in them. Our vice president, J.D. Vance, dismissed one of the group chats as kids do stupid things, especially young boys, even though the chat included men in their 20s and early 30s who hold local, state, and federal government posts. What did you make of that? Why do these people get to be boys until they're, like, old enough to retire from the NFL, as a CBS News analyst said?
I mean, totally. Like, why do men get to be boys till they're 40? Whereas, like, society treats young girls as women, like, the minute they get their driver's license.
The minute they get their period.
I know.
The minute they get their period.
It's like, you're a woman now. Like, no girl in sight. Here's the thing that really irritated me, Erin. Like, I'm a mom of two boys, right? I got a 5-year-old and 10-year-old. And, like, it is literally the opposite of what I'm teaching my sons. Like, I don't want them to have, like, a get-out-of-free-jail card. Like, I'm raising them to be men. And isn't that what the Republicans want to do, too? So it was so hypocritical, right, to call these, like, 38-year-old men boys.
I mean, and also J.D. Vance literally just turned 40 last year. So, like, is he just, like, a junior man? Is there some sort of, like, scouting level between boyhood and like full-on manhood? Like it's so I feel like there's a formula. I think that if you're white, you get to be a boy until you're like 40. That's the like middle
cutoff. That's the formula.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. If you have a rich dad, you're a boy until your dad dies. So you can be a 70-year-old boy if you have like a 95-year-old dad who's still alive and a billionaire.
Ooh, I like this formula.
Yeah, I mean, very interesting. I don't like it, but I feel like it helps us understand their, like, I think
why they're so fucked up, right?
Yeah.
Like, why, like, how their, like, psyche thinks about it. To me, it's, like, also just about, like, excuses. I feel like we saw this during the Kavanaugh hearings, too, right? Where they were like, well, what that happened when he was, like, a boy, it doesn't necessarily count.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they have no consideration for the age of the other party involved. The only thing that matters is the personhood and the boyhood of the perpetrator and, like, excusing it and not, like, how that impacted anybody around them. It's pretty crazy.
And, like, very hypocritical because I feel like the whole manosphere is about, like, teaching boys to be men. Like, do some push-ups, you know what I mean? Like, work out, like, learn how to be tough. But when it comes to, like, accountability, like, no, you don't need to be accountable for your racist rants or
right.
your sexist rants. Then you still get to be a boy. So it's just, again, I think it's a classic conservative republicanism about, like, the hypocrisy. Like, different
right.
rules for different folks.
You know, it reminds me, you saying that kind of brought up a lot. I was just thinking about, like, how it sort of reminds me of, like, when you watch, like, a show about American men trying to date women abroad, and they want to be able to boss them around, and the women abroad are like, okay, earn money and pay for, like, okay, be a provider. Like, if you want to be in charge, like, earn boss money. And they're like, well, no, we're splitting everything 50-50. It's sort of like that same dynamic where it's like, I want to be in charge. I want to be respected. I'm the stronger one. I'm the one that deserves all the leadership positions. Anybody else who is not a white man, who is in STEM or who is an engineer or who is in a powerful position, got it because of some DEI initiative.
Right.
And then yet, when I do something wrong, that's because I'm just a little boy.
Yes, it's not my fault.
I'm just a little boy.
It's not my fault. I mean, it's all because we've never addressed unearned privilege. Like, it's a conversation that they never really want to have. It's not about earning it. It's about, like, daddy giving it to you or your race being able to allow you to have, you know, privileges, not because you earned them or you worked for them, but because you're entitled to them. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, such a fundamental conversation in our country that we just haven't had.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think it's dangerous, right? I say this as, like, again, a mother of sons. Like, I don't want my sons to be raised thinking that they are not going to be held accountable for their actions. To me, that's the opposite of raising a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we could talk about this for the entire hour, but unfortunately,
yes.
There's more fuckery we need to get into. Okay, well, the father of fertilization, ugh, it's so gross that he called himself that. The fertilization president is finally stepping up, maybe. Last week, Donald Trump announced new federal guidance on insurance coverage for IVF services. The plan essentially would make opting into fertility benefits similar to opting in for dental and vision benefits as part of an employer's insurance plan. So already, we are not really making IVF free for everybody, which is what he promised during the campaign trail. What we're doing is making a large business able to opt into an optional insurance plan that people can choose to buy with
right.
no assistance from the government, no tax credits or anything like that. It's not refundable or anything
right.
like that. Okay. He also announced that the manufacturer of a commonly used infertility treatment called Gonal F, which is a terrible name for a drug. Every time I watch a drug commercial, it has a name and it sounds like a Utah baby name.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you need to give it a little, like, a girl's name?
Or like a venereal disease.
Yes, right. One of my favorite games to play is Model of Car, Pharmaceutical, or Utah Baby Name. And it
Ooh.
Is a hard game to play.
Yeah, don't want to play that when I'm drinking.
No, sometimes it's two. Elantra. There's definitely been, like, a child named Elantra somewhere. But anyway, Gonal F is the name of this infertility treatment that is now going to be offered at a steep discount after Trump agreed to exempt them from threatened pharmaceutical tariffs. Again, he threatens to help solve a problem he caused.
Yes.
It's not really clear how much of a difference this will make financially because, as anybody who's been through IVF or has held somebody's hand as they've gone through IVF, as anybody who's done that knows, it's a lot more than just the drug. You know,
yep.
you're getting labs, you're getting ultrasounds, you're going under anesthesia, you're getting so many workups, embryo storage. Like,
you're missing work, right?
You're missing, Exactly. And there's like the stuff you actually have to pay for directly, and then there's the indirect paid stuff beyond just the actual drug that Trump is now exempting from the tariffs he invented for reasons we still don't understand. And as a reminder, you know, like I mentioned, in 2024, Trump promised under the Trump administration, we're going to be paying for the treatment. We're going to be mandating the insurance company pay. As Elizabeth Warren pointed out, quote, it's clear that Donald Trump lied when he told the American people he'd make IVF available to every family for free. Instead, Trump's new genius plan is to rip away Americans' health insurance and gut the CDC's IVF team, and then politely ask companies to add IVF coverage out of the goodness of their own hearts, with zero federal investment and no requirement for them to follow through. It's insulting and yet another one of Trump's broken promises to American families. Okay, so what do you make of this plan?
It means nothing, like smoke and mirrors. And here's the thing. I've done a ton of IVF. I've had my babies from IVF. I've sat in those waiting rooms. I've paid those bills. And so when he announced this, I was like, this is great. Because how wealthy you are or what your paycheck is shouldn't determine whether you get to be a parent in this country. It's wrong. But then what he actually announced was just like nothing.
Yeah.
Companies paying for your IVF, guess what? Some of them already are, right? Bringing the cost down to $5,000 in a moment of inflation and people are like eating hamburger helper because they can't put food on the table, that is not actually making IVF free. So it was just classic Trump administration, just smoke and mirrors. Lies, mm-hmm. lies.
Well, as somebody who's been through IVF, and like I'm sure you know other parents who have as well, like, you know, it's a stressful process. Who do you think this is for? Do you think anybody who's been through IVF would look at this and be like, this is great. Good idea.
No. I mean, here's the thing. The thing about IVF is it's a numbers game. It's like if you can afford to have round after round after round after round, you may be able to have a baby. And so like bringing the cost down is not actually to $5,000 is not meaningful. Like, mm-hmm. you're right. It's not just about making the drug free. It's like making the entire process free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we still don't have like federal mandates around like leave. Like you mentioned, you have to take time off work to do it. Like maybe Trump could have introduced something at the federal level that was like anybody who's taking time off work for IVF is entitled to be paid for that time, like right. on top of their sick time.
Right. And here's the other thing. Listen, I'm all about like, fine, if companies want to like shoulder the bill and give you more stuff and pay for paid leave and pay for childcare and like pay for your entire insurance premium, great. But here's the thing. Like he was announcing something that's already happening. Like 42% of companies already offer IVF treatments. And like, let's talk about that. Like to me, that when companies started offering fertility benefits, it was great, but it was also so girl bossy. Like, why were they doing that? They were doing that because they wanted women to prolong their pregnancy so they could stay in the workforce. It wasn't about actually helping people have babies or like, you know what I mean? Like, have a sane parenthood or motherhood in America. Because if you did that, you would have offered paid leave and childcare at the same time. It was very, very like a capitalist motivation. So for me, again, it was an announcement of like more of nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting that you say that. So really what companies want is for women to have this incentive available for them so that women would be like, okay, cool. I'm not even going to try to have a baby until I'm like 38. And it's going to be fine because they're going to cover IVF.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. That is really insidious.
Yeah. And we already know it's like, you know this, like given women's fertility cycles, like your best eggs are when you're in your 20s, not your 30s and not your 40s. So it's also a lot of false hope because a lot of women have, you know, frozen their eggs, you know, or their embryos and then nothing came of it. So we are not doing this out of like the genuineness of wanting Americans to have families and to build families. It is all about profits, 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 profits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you got enough money to put resources into like AI or more, you know, company tax credits or more tax credits for people who are wealthy and you're genuine about like the birth rate and wanting to increase it, like do the right thing. Like, you know what you need to do. Like, don't, it's like gimmicks. It's like when they started like offering like moms medals, you know what I mean, for having babies. It's all about like.
You mean like what Hitler did? Like Mussolini?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just more gimmicks from this administration.
Yeah, it feels super gimmicky. And yeah, it's the thing about you bringing up profits is that it's like not even profits on the long term. It is like short term, like next quarter, next year. It's not like, can we keep these how do we keep these women working for us and developing in their career for this company? Like, how can we enable them to do that?
Yeah.
Like, enabling them to do that would be like, you know, providing IVF, providing parental leave, providing childcare subsidies, like make it so it would be like any reason that a woman would want to quit. I mean, and we'll get more into this later. Any reason that a woman would feel compelled to leave the workforce beyond just like, it is my choice and I don't like working here. Like, right. They're not doing anything to shore up those reasons.
No. And it's, you know, one of the interesting things is we know, for example, like oftentimes young women, before they're even in a relationship or having kids, are thinking about, is this the kind of place where I can raise a family? Mm-hmm. And they look around and they don't see women like them being able to do that, and they leave. And so, like, these genuine signals of, like, yes, IVF, yes, paid leave, yes, childcare, yes, grace, yes, flexibility, yes, you know what I mean? I'm not going to mandate you. All these things are signals. Here's the other thing, though, I wanted to talk about, like, why this policy now is really interesting, is like, here's the thing, like, half of Silicon Valley is just laying people off. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about how they retain workers. They're thinking about how to get rid of workers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not, in corporate America right now, there isn't a conversation around how do we actually provide more benefits? How do we actually make people happier? It's like, actually, how do we push you out of here because, you know, AI is going to do everything. So it's interesting that, like, I don't think there's a company out there right now that has, like, heard that and said, great, let me actually figure out how to offer either greater IVF benefits, or if I don't offer it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you take a look at, like, choosing to have kids or not, like, it's such a risky gambit just regardless. And like, it's getting riskier and riskier, financially riskier, physically riskier, like, more, like, career-wise riskier. Like, it's getting riskier, so I don't understand. I feel like it's economically illiterate for people to be puzzled by the, like, drop in birth rate, because it's an economically sound decision. I mean, economically, like, in, like, lowercase e, people assessing, like, cost benefit in both intangible and tangible ways. Like, it is economically more risky now than it's been in my lifetime.
Absolutely. I mean, 40% of parents are in debt because of the cost of childcare. You look at credit card debt right now. The number one credit card debt is people are putting their childcare bills on there. So, yeah. Like, you're absolutely right. Every family sits down and they do the math. Mm-hmm. How much is my rent or my mortgage? How much is my childcare? How much would my childcare be? You know, and, like, what are my groceries? And then what do I have maybe to take a vacation and forget about, like, if my car breaks down, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Or I have a medical emergency or something happens. I got zero slack in our family budget for that. And so, absolutely. But I got to think, like, Aaron, like, how dumb are they? Like, they have to know this. Mm-hmm. They have to know this. So, like, what's the con? You know what I mean? By offering these other things, do they really believe the American people are that stupid?
I think they're just looking for the flimsiest of excuses to cling to so that, like, when they're doing a cable news hit, when, you know, whatever, you mm-hmm. know, Joe Bumblefuck from Kansas is, like, on Fox News feeling like a big star in a debate with, like, Jessica Tarlov, he's able to be like, well, he did do this, like, IVF thing, and then, you know, that's all that people that watch Fox News and follow Donald Trump say. Like, he did it. Yeah, he did it. And they don't really want to dig further because they don't want to be anything but right about this. And it's like, I mean, that's a whole other conversation about the cultiness of like, Trump's followers. I think people just are looking for one plausible talking point to drop. And now they have it, and they're not going to do anything else.
Yeah, in this era of disinformation, they'll find a fact to back it up. Because you're right, it's a great soundbite. Like, you're on Fox News, you're watching it, and, like, the father of IVF makes IVF available for everyone. And, like, no one is actually reading the fine line, right, underneath to see, like, well, actually, what am I really getting? Until they pursue this path and they get their bill, which is essentially sometimes 1/8 of their income. Mm-hmm. That's what pisses me off, is, like, you know this. I mean, I fought to be a mom. Like, I remember sitting in those rooms. I remember looking at our bank account being like, all right, how many tries do I have? How many times can I actually do this? Like, you are playing with people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really gross. I think that this is, like, ultimately really gross. And I know that people that are in advocacy groups that are, like, pro-IVF have to say something nice. Like, this is a great step or whatever. But, like, let's just be real. It is Donald Trump is getting way more out of this announcement than anybody is going to get out of this program. And
that's right.
And I think that's why we should be skeptical of it. And I think that's why we should see it as kind of like gross window dressing.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, more hysteria.
Hysteria is brought to you by Hiya. Alyssa, typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise, filled with 2 teaspoons of sugar, unhealthy chemicals, and other gummy additives growing kids should never eat. That's why Hiya created a super-powered, chewable vitamin. While many children's vitamins are filled with 5 grams of sugar, which is known to contribute to a variety of health issues, Hiya is made with zero sugar and zero gummy additives. Yet it tastes great and is perfect for picky eaters, like my picky eater, Alyssa.
She is a picky eater, and she loves her vitamins.
She is a picky eater, and she loves her vitamins. The latest thing that she refused to eat, chicken nuggets.
What?
She just wouldn't. She was like, I don't like them. No thanks. And I was like, what? These were engineered in a lab for people like you, and you are saying no to them. But she does not say no to her Hiya vitamins. In fact, she reminds me. She reminds me in the morning that she needs to take her Hiya vitamin. And last night, she was upset because she forgot in the morning. And she was like, will my body still know how to use the vitamins at night? And I was like, yes, actually, I know. I know. We're teaching her about, like, nutrition and how, like, the food you eat helps build you up and make you strong. And she's trying to demonstrate, like, this is because I ate carrots or this is because I took my vitamins. It's very cute. Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment that our kids need with a yummy taste they love. Formulated with the help of pediatricians and nutritional experts, Hiya is pressed with a blend of 12 organic fruits and veggies, then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, B12, C, zinc, folate, and many others to help support immune system, energy, brain function, mood, concentration, teeth, bones, and more.
It's non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free, and everything else you can imagine. Every single batch is third-party tested for heavy metals and microbials in a qualified GMP-compliant lab using scientifically validated testing methods, so you know the product is safe and nutritious. Hiya is designed for kids 2 and up and sent straight to your door, so parents have one less thing to worry about. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/hysteria. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to HiyaHealth.com/hysteria and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Spring is sprung and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for ballroom busters. This week, President Trump succeeded where the 9/11 hijackers couldn't and knocked down the east wing of the White House to make room for his stupid corporate ballroom. I guess that means Melania's finally off the hook for Christmas decorating. What did you make of those pictures, Reshma?
I just didn't want to look at them. I mean, look, did you see the Rose Garden? They made that look like Panera's, like, outdoor seating. It was like monstrosity. So who
knows.
It's so bad. It's like they say that he's got 80s brain, and I think that explains a lot. Like, you know the theory that, like, people's hair, they have the haircut from the last time in their life they felt sexually attractive. I feel like...
Oh, is that what 80s brain is?
Well, I think he's got 80s brain. That's the point in his life when he was at...
When he was hot and he was attractive.
Yeah, right. He was sexually attractive. He had money. Well, he had his dad was, like, had given him a lot of money. And he was, like, all over the news. And he was,
he didn't have to do all that false, like, that fake tan stuff, too. I mean, and, like, his ruin people's bed sheets when he's, like, you know, staying in their houses.
Right. His neck didn't look like a vagina. Like, he... He was young and virile. He had those children. He had the beautiful wife who he said was on the Olympic ski team, but she wasn't. He's got 80s brain. I think that Panera Bread redo of the Rose Garden is a really good example of it, because it sort of looks like a place, like a set piece from Troop Beverly Hills.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that movie?
Yes, I do remember that movie.
I could see, like,
and
Shelley
I remember
Long.
Watching it being like, oh, that's really nice. But now we're in 2025 and it's really not.
No, it's not nice. And then the ballroom stuff is really, it's really crazy. Do they have to get permits?
Like, I don't know. It's just crass. I mean, like, Congress is not in session. People are not getting paid. Like, the government is shut down. And now you're doing a demolition for, like, something that is, quite frankly, like, a luxury good, and that is not even going to be done that well. Like, it's just, like, it's super tone deaf.
Yeah. And it's, like, sponsored by all the, like, worst corporations.
Oh, my God.
Like, all the tackiest people.
And it's, like, do we not have enough grifting happening in the White House? Like, I don't need a ballroom sponsored by Amazon. I mean, come on.
No, a ballroom sponsored by Amazon. Like, what? A ballroom sponsored by Amazon would be, like, you can come in 5 minutes, but then, like, it takes 2 days to get in the thing. Anyway, that was my prime joke. Nothing ever comes when it's supposed to come. And I'm about to cancel it, to be honest. And speaking of balls, according to RFK Jr., America is in a fertility crisis. And it's because teenage boys' sperm counts and testosterone are lower than those of men in their 60s. What a weird thing to say. We don't really typically measure the sperm counts of teenage boys as, like, a matter of course. We're not having them go to the doctor and, like, ejaculate and then send, you know, we're not doing that to the children.
I do not plan on doing that.
To the male children, we're not doing that
to the kids.
I'm not clear where he's getting that info. At least what we've gleaned from his bullshit spewing at the White House press event last week, he doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. He also claimed that girls are hitting puberty 6 years early, which is crazy because that would put puberty at six. 6 year old girls getting their periods. That's not true. Mm. We are, if it was true, there would be, like, K-pop Demon Hunters themed tampons available, and there are not. And this isn't the first time he's made strange claims like this. He said nearly the exact same thing on the Jesse Waters show back in April. I also want to point out that a couple weeks ago, he said that he observed a woman who was pregnant with a baby in her placenta. Mm. So how can he be so confident and so wrong?
Interesting. I mean, isn't that, like, a requirement to get a job in the White House now? Like, high confidence, low intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get in.
Yeah. I mean, some of the quotes that he said during that press conference, I am like, I pulled them out and they're stupider than George W. Bush quotes.
Oh, please share.
Remember when people were making, like, desk calendars?
Oh,
you could
buy
a desk calendar that were like a dumb George W. Bush quote per day. Like, is our children learning? So one of the things that he said, I'm going to read this to you and just, when my uncle was president, the fertility rate in this country was 3.5%. Today, it is 1.6%. The replacement rate, in other words, the amount of fertility that you need in order to keep the population even, is 2.1%. We are below replacement right now. What does that mean? 2.1.
Who knows?
3.5%. Okay, he's using percent wrong, right? 3.5% of what? No. The fertility rate means the number. I feel like he doesn't even know what fertility rate means.
And he doesn't really know what replacement rate means. It's like, right? It's basically like how many kids do you have to have every year to replace the ones who have died?
Yes, exactly. And keep the population stable, right? You need 2.1. You need the average childbearing woman to give birth to 2.1 children in order to replace, like, the number of people who die every year to keep the population steady. The fertility rate was never 3.5%. I don't know what that means. There was a period of time where women were having on average 3.5 children.
Yeah.
Every
Well,
moment.
Also, and people were dying younger. Yeah. Right? So it's like you didn't need as much replacement.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, before vaccines, children were dying younger. A lot of the low life expectancy of, like, the pre-vaccine era was because children so frequently died before age 5 of diseases that we now can prevent with vaccines and modern medicine and modern hygiene. And so, yeah. Anyway,
can you imagine having to brief this guy? It's like, don't give him any numbers because he's going to fuck them all
up. He's going to just add percent to the end. He doesn't understand what fertility rate means. He also said— he also said this, the end of his quote about how, like, the average teenager's sperm is, like, not nearly as good as his old man sperm or whatever, because it did feel self-referential. Mm, like, it felt like a humble brag. He was right up there being like, check out my
life. Let me tell you how much sperm I got here.
I've got pop rocks in these balls. sorry, that was gross. But he said, he ended the quote by saying, our girls are hitting puberty 6 years early, and that's bad, but also our parents aren't having children. What does that mean?
I don't know. I half the time it's like you just can't even. Our parents are not having children.
I mean, that's George W. Bush level.
Yeah, totally.
It's so.
What he means are like people are not having children. Like our birth rate is at like a 50-year low. That's true.
Uh huh. Yeah, it's at like 1.6. But it's not like going, whatever.
And it's not because the testes are low. It's because the childcare is high.
It's because the childcare is high. And like a lot of people are just like, I don't want to do that. It just seems really hard. And then also there are people that have like one kid and want to have two, but can't because they're like, holy shit, that would be like a second mortgage. Yeah. Or they have two kids and they want to have three. And they're like, oh, holy shit, I can't afford to buy a new car to fit all three of my kids.
Do you want to hear my silver lining though about all this?
Yes. Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, at least he's, for the first time, they're not blaming the women.
That's
true. They're blaming the men.
They're blaming the teenage boys for not getting out there and getting more teenage girls pregnant.
Yeah. Or lifting some weights.
Yeah.
Taking some supplements, right,
to get working out in jeans.
Working out in jeans. Oh, doing those push-ups.
Oh, God. Our, like, ropey, pink, old HHS head is just such a – he doesn't seem to understand – like, I said this a lot on the show, but he's got, like, science test handed back face down vibes where it's like, no, you're not using the correct terms at all. There's also something very upsetting about the, like, implying that, like, little girls are ready to have babies when they're
young. Yeah, but oh, my God, that's disgusting. But the boys are – but the men are not because they don't have enough testosterone.
So old guys are going to have to start marrying – like, ugh. Did you read into that, too?
Yeah, now I am because you just said it, and now I'm seeing it. Yeah. It's like he wasn't going off. He could have taken that in a different way, right? He could have been like, young girls are hitting puberty earlier. We got to do something about it. It's the water or whatever crazy things he's going to say. But he went in this other direction of essentially, like, we have to – like, I felt like it was like a dog whistle to the manosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, see? You know what I mean? And now they're taking away your testosterone. And you know what's going to basically happen, right? They're going to be having all these conversations about what supplements they have to take and what they're getting poisoned by. And it is exactly like this is their tactic. This is what they do. Like, that's why I think it's like he's a fucking idiot, but they're also fucking brilliant, like in what they're trying to do, which is like gin up the anger of men and young men, because people hear that and like, oh, you're taking away my manhood. Oh, you're basically, you're the reason, you know what I mean, that like my testosterone count is down. It's just another way to create outrage.
Well, anything but blame the chemicals that are being dumped into our groundwater and the chemicals that are being released into the air that we breathe. Like, to me, that's the thing that is the most offensive about this, because you're right. They're going to be like, no, check out, eat this charcoal. You know, rub it on your butthole before you go to sleep. And like, then you're going to detoxify. They're going to say words like, you're going to detoxify your whatever. And like, you juice up your testosterone or whatever. And like, I think that they're trying to direct the anger at, like, cultural issues, like women, emasculating them.
Emasculating them, right.
Yeah, an emasculating culture. Instead of, like, the real thing that they should be mad about, if they are going to be mad about something in general, if, like, people are having, like, endocrinological Did I say that correctly? Issues with their glands and their hormones. Like, those are not culturally influenced. What is influencing that is what is around and in your body, and it's not just food. It's things that are being put on food, things that are being put in the water. Right. And the fact that that RFK Jr. is out there, like, humble bragging about his, like, excellent old man sperm and his seven kids, like, while at the same time deliberately turning his back on the actual demonstrated reasons for people to have hormonal interruptions is, like, so insulting to me.
So insulting. And not wanting to do anything about it. And also, like, the data's not – it's not clear, right?
That's true.
It's like – and here's the problem. It's like he's just gotten away with this. Like, he became the health secretary after one bullshit lie after another lie after another lie after another lie, all, you know what I mean, dressed in science. And so, like – this, like, shtick has worked for him. In fact, there's an entire movement of moms that love him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's like, the danger of all of it.
You know what? He's a really good example of somebody who, whenever I see him speak with the confident wrongness that he speaks with, especially about things as complicated as, like, hormones and science and human development and biology, I'm like, oh, I know exactly who you've been hanging out with in L.A., and they're stupid. Like, there are so many, like, there's a lot of, like, I live in LA, and I say this with love because I like this city quite a bit. It took a while to grow on me, but I really do like it. And there are smart people out there. But if you are a person who wants to feel smart, but you're pretty dumb, it's really easy to surround yourself with people who are giant idiots who make you feel smart. And I can picture the exact clique, the, like, that he was running with of, like, dummies on the West Side. I can picture it.
Yeah. God, it's like it's the opposite of Taylor Swift says, which is, like, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite philosophy of that.
Yes, exactly. He's like, I am in the right room. I am always going to be the smartest person. All these idiots who are, like, you know, Erewhon idiots. Like, those are my people. But you know what? We're all going to suffer for it. And it's very frustrating. I want to close this segment by pointing out another creepy thing that Dr. Oz, who is the Medicare administrator, he predicted during the same press conference that there would be a lot more Trump babies as a result of the president's IVF treatment reforms after years of America being under-babied.
Under-babied. Same thing. It's like, but this is all the scam, right? Which is like, I'm going to essentially tell you the reason why, like, we're under-babied is because all you women are too focused on your jobs rather than staying home and, like, making babies. Mm-hmm. It's like, to me, it's again about, like, blaming the women and blaming the culture. And if you just did your role, if you stayed home and, like, fulfilled your duty, you know, you would do right by your nation. I mean, this is so, like, birth of a nation. Mm-hmm. You know, this language has been around since, like, the 1800s in terms of, like, what we're saying to women that their role is and that they should be doing and who's to blame.
Literally every fascist, I think there's that Margaret Atwood quote that's like, fascism is always from the same playbook. I'm paraphrasing, but that they always use the same playbook. When she was talking about when she researched Handmaid's Tale, how she incorporated different elements of things that had already happened around the world, like things in the American South to black women, things in Czechoslovakia. Things in Romania. She talked about things that had happened. You know, there was all of these things that had already happened, and, like, we're seeing it happen again. Like, we're seeing talks of medals for moms, which is like I mentioned, something that Hitler did and Mussolini did and other totalitarians did. We're seeing all of these, like, all of the fascist groundwork being laid. And, like, something that is funny to me, kind of, like, bitterly funny, is that even in places with draconian laws that restrict access to contraception, that make abortion illegal, and that, like, force women to stay home and start having babies, even in places that did that in the most draconian and horrible way, what happened was women of means and women who had higher education figured out a way around it within a couple years. There is no raising the birth rate in a sustained way. You can stabilize the fall of it, which is like what they've done in Germany and other places by like introducing actual policies that address the real reasons that people are not having babies. But you can't just be like, we're doing it. We're having babies.
But see,
now.
I don't even think so. I also, it's so interesting what you're saying too. Is also like we're at this tipping point, right, where the birth rate is declining. And we now we can go look at Canada. We can go look at Norway. We can go look at Japan. We can look at other nations that were similarly at this point and say, well, what did they do? Mm-hmm. And Hillary Clinton always says this, like, if you are a policymaker, you're looking at this and you're like, how do I just throw money at people? You know what I mean? And say, take your free childcare. Take your free paid leave. Let's make, you know what I mean, school free. You know what I mean? Let's like make workplaces like work. Like that's what you do to incentivize people to have children. We know that. That's why I think what's so fascinating when you listen to this press conference and you watch what they're doing, I don't think they're really trying to incentivize people to have children. Mm-hmm. I think that what they're trying to do is, again, dog whistle to men and say, listen, the reason why you're suffering, the reason why this isn't working is because we gave all those women over there too much opportunity. Because this messaging is happening at the same time, you know what I mean, that we're taking away DE&I opportunities from women, that mm-hmm. My Girls Who Code clubs are being shut down. 11 states have made it illegal for you to have gender-based educational programs.
Oh, my God.
So, all this stuff, right— is happening all at the same time. And when you look at the job numbers, which we're going to talk about, you know, later, it's like the proof is in the pudding. It's working. It's working. And women are opting out and saying, I can't do all this. Mm-hmm. Now, again, it's not for the reason for them to stay home and be like, all right, well, then I'll just have children. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's basically to eliminate the competition. Us.
Right. Yeah. I think that's completely right. It's to eliminate women as competition. And I think another thing that I'm noticing is that it's not about making mothers, they're not making mothers' lives better. They're making the lives of people who don't have children worse. Exactly. They're making all the other, they're making it harder to make choices. So nobody's better off. No women are better off. No men are better off. No children are better off because the mental health of their mother is very, very important in the overall health of children.
Yeah.
So, like, it is making things worse. I think it's also because these people can't fucking govern. They don't have good ideas.
And they need to dominate somebody. I mean, my friend Anna Malika Tubbs, her incredible book about mothers and you remember the founding fathers, right? When they designed this country and they decided, well, women are not going to have the right to vote and, you know, we're going to basically, you know, have a hierarchy in gender. They didn't have to do that because mm-hmm. at that time, France was giving women the vote. They had the Native American population where you had female chieftains. They actually had an example of what women's power look like. Mm-hmm. But because these were a ragtag bunch of young men, orphans, not having a lot of money, not having a lot of privilege, feeling very insecure about their status, they designed a republic that allowed them to dominate over someone else. Mm-hmm. That is that DNA of domination, of insecurity, right, is baked into our nation. And that's what's playing out right now. They don't, like you said, they don't know how to govern. So the mm-hmm. only way that they govern is by dominating others, whether it's immigrants, whether it's women, whether it's trans kids, right? That's how they govern, by bullying and taking opportunities away from others.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's way easier to kick a sandcastle down than it is to help someone build a sandcastle.
Yep.
To learn how to build a sandcastle. They're literally, it's a nation of sandcastle kickers, for sure. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It's like, it's a country based on domination. And right now, we're kind of in a real extreme pendulum swing moment of that domination thing.
Right, because it's like exacerbated by disinformation because I can just like people believe that shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and here's the thing. This sort of coercion has never worked to increase the overall welfare of people in a country or the economic health of people in a country. Like, removing half of the economic power of the economy is going to end in disaster. If you did force women home, the economy would shrink catastrophically, right? Right. This is not going to end well. There's no way that this ends well. But for now, I guess it's giving some people some jollies in D.C. as they tear down the East Wing of the White House. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more hysteria.
Hysteria is brought to you by Naked Wines.
Alyssa, I love Naked Wines.
I love Naked Wines, too. Do you ever find yourself in a wine rut?
I do get into a wine rut. I will just, like, in the summer, it's like I'll have all rosé and some Pinot Grigio. And then, you know, it's like spooky season out. I need something new. I need a little, mm-hmm. I need a little refresh in my wine
fridge. I think that, like, once you are a seasoned wine drinker, you sort of start to have your favorites. And if you're not being challenged constantly, eventually you're just going to drink the same thing over and over again, which is fine, but it doesn't necessarily like complement all the possible foods you would want it to complement or match with all the possible weather changes, like you said, Alyssa. Mm-hmm. This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a wine club that directly connects you to the world's best independent winemakers so you can get world-class wine delivered straight to your door. Use our code Hysteria for the code and password at nakedwines.com and get $100 off your first order. That's six bottles for just $39.99.
How do they do it? Naked brings you amazing wine straight from the winery, up to 60% less than what you would pay in the store. By cutting out extra costs like middlemen markups, winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality.
One of the things I liked the most about it was you take a little test. It's like, what do you like?
Yes.
What don't you like? I was like, absolutely no Chardonnays. They listened.
Ever.
And they gave me some really interesting white wines this summer.
You know, I did not realize I loved a white Burgundy. Who knew that was a thing? I didn't know.
Yeah. A white Burgundy can be, I like it going into the fall. A white Burgundy is nice going into the fall. Naked Wines has been around for over 15 years and backs over 90 independent winemakers around the world to make the wine you love to drink.
Now is the time to join the Naked Wines community. Head to nakedwines.com/hysteria, click enter voucher, and put our code Hysteria for both the code and password for $100 off your first order. That's six bottles for only $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off your first six bottles at nakedwines.com/hysteria and use the code and password Hysteria for six bottles of wine for $39.99.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that is watching out for shrapnel. Over the weekend, J.D. Vance, God, second Vance appearance. Lord of the Vance. Vance in my pants. Over the weekend, J.D. Vance.
Please don't put Vance in your pants.
No, I know. But he really does make what's in people's pants his business. So that does kind of hold as a slogan. It's very unfortunate, though. Okay, over the weekend, Vice President D.J. Vance. I'm going to mention him as a DJ. That'd be funny. He attended the Marines' 250th birthday, which included live munitions being fired over I-5. Shrapnel from artillery that was detonated hit at least two vehicles. State officials in California and the White House did not agree over what part of the highway to close. Firing live rounds over a busy highway isn't just wrong. It's dangerous, said Governor Gavin Newsom. This is such an example of, like, the administration being like, we're going to fire rounds over I-5. And the governor being like, don't do that. That's really dangerous. Something could fall. And then some shrapnel did fall on J.D. Vance's motorcade. Who could have predicted this, Freshna?
No. It's just like they want this cosplay so hard. It's like the ICE raids and the military parades. It's like, buy some like G.I. Joe dolls already and just stop making things dangerous for us instead.
I know. I kind of feel like, have you ever seen Blazing Saddles?
No.
Okay. Well, it's a Mel Brooks classic from the 1970s, and people always cite it as like, they could never make it today, and they absolutely could because it's just like really, it's really well done. But there is, and sorry to spoil it, you can still enjoy the movie with the spoiler.
It's okay. I probably won't watch it.
There is a town in the West that is about to be attacked by a gang of outlaws, and a sheriff who turns out to be a black man, who the townspeople are very uncomfortable with, who is supposed to protect the town. And so the way to protect the town is they just build another fake town and they trick the villains into attacking the fake town. So they think they're attacking it. They think they're getting the real Rock Ridge, but they're not.
Joke's
on
them.
They're attacking like a set. So what I think what California should do is make a second separate California.
Ooh.
We have there's like a real downturn in entertainment happening right now. There are a lot of people with a lot of skills around set building, set design, production.
That are unemployed.
Design. They're out of work right now.
That's a great idea.
We're going to build a fake California. We're going to build a fake little ocean, and we're going to have the next time the Trump administration wants to come here, the next time J.D. Vance wants to come to Disneyland, we're sending him to the fake Disneyland.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's going to be
over.
Are we
going to do a fake Governor Newsom, too?
Oh, yeah.
And then they can have, like, a little fight.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Fake Governor Newsom will be a highly trained martial artist in a wig. And so they'll get close and they'll be like, wait a minute. I thought he was taller. And then when you get close, it's going to be like one of those Nathan For You moments where you're like, this person is like.
That's how I always feel like. I feel like J.D. Vance is a short man, but really he's a tall man. But he's like a tall man in a short man's body. Like normally, like you're a short person in a tall person's body, but he's like the opposite for me.
Yeah, he seems short, but I think
because he's got Napoleon complex.
I think it's because he's built like E.T. He was in the Marines, and his body is shaped like E.T. the extraterrestrial, and I think that bums him out. And it's getting worse. It's getting worse. But anyway, I mean, not to snark on the body of an elected official, but like
we shouldn't.
He sucks, and I don't care. All right. We're going to talk about women in the workforce. When women left the workforce en masse during the pandemic, it was dubbed the She Session. And now in 2025, we're seeing the largest exit of women from the workforce since. So is the She Session back? And can we come up with a better word for it, please? One that isn't a tongue twister. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, more than 450,000 women have dropped out of the U.S. labor market since January, the steepest decline since the pandemic. But why? So CNN published an article with anecdotes from a range of women talking about what drove them to leave the workforce. Reasons including electing to become a stay-at-home parent due to limited childcare options, taking care of aging parents, which is a big one that doesn't get talked about enough, returning to pursue higher education, layoffs or early retirement sparked by DOGE, and burnout. Now, Reshma, you brought this article to our attention. And you have notably criticized elected officials last year at a panel for treating women as a social safety net. What do you mean by that, and how does that relate to this story?
Yeah, I mean, look, I started Moms First in 2021. I took out a full-page ad in the New York Times to Joe Biden. It was his, you know, first 100 days of his campaign. And I was like, moms don't work for free. You know what I mean? We're not your social safety net, like past pay leave and childcare. Because here's the thing. Other countries have social safety nets. Like, America has moms. And the reality is after year after year after year, if you're doing two jobs, if you're working and you're taking care of your kids and you got no childcare and you got no paid leave and, you know, you have no grace when your children get sick, you get exhausted, you get burned out, and then you leave the workforce. And you leave the workforce when you can't afford to leave the workforce. Because here's the joke, right? We don't live in the 1950s where any American family can afford to have someone stay at home, you know what I mean, in a heteronormative relationship. And so, like, it is like not even realistic. And so many women, because they can't afford childcare, because they're exhausted from doing two things, you know, are foregoing putting food on the table or buying diapers or new shoes. And we're not doing anything about it. And what frustrates me about this even more is, like, we know what to do. Like, the pandemic in that way was a gift. Because while we were hiding our kids' pictures and we weren't now, because of the pandemic, they were invading our Zoom screens. So everyone suddenly knew that, oh, guess what? I am a mom and I work. And you saw companies be like, okay, we need flexibility. We need to allow people to work from home. We need to give them grace. And when we did that, we actually saw the labor market return to pre-pandemic participation levels. Right? Because that's all women need. Give me a little bit of ownership over my time. Now, we're taking all that away. And you got folks like Jamie Dimon being like, back to work 5 days a week, you know? And so, again, women are leaving and we're back to where we were in pandemic levels. And it's such a shame because it doesn't have to be this way. And we know what we need to do to fix it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's also, like, something looming on the horizon that is going to make things even more complicated for women who have children and for women who don't have children. Because other than spouses or partners, daughters are the most frequent elder care providers. Adults age 65 and older who need long-term care are over 50% more likely to be cared for by their daughters than by their sons. Is this something that's even on the radar of our elected officials?
No, but it is definitely in my group chat. Like, half my friends are dealing with this. They're taking care of their kids and they're taking care of their elderly parents, right? We call this the sandwich generation. And so this is, and we're dealing with menopause at the same time, right? So, like, yay, all these things are happening. Yay, right? And again, there is no real grace or understanding or investment, or even like, to me, it's like, I don't know, man. I feel like countries are judged in how we take care of our elderly and our young. And so we should be like helping these women, rewarding these men. There should be tax credits and benefits. And there should be you want to give people medals? Give women medals for that.
Yeah. I mean, something that I've had conversations about with friends that don't have children, that like women who are, you know, between 35 and 50 don't have children, but they have their siblings have children. So they're the only one that doesn't have children among their siblings. They are expected to be the ones to look after their parents. And like that is, I mean, I can see from a practical perspective where it's like, yeah, well, my sister and my brother have kids. Then I guess somebody's got to take care of mom and dad, and I guess that's got to be me. But that is like, that is a lot to put on one person. And the decisions they're making are like, they affect their siblings as well. And it becomes this whole, this like family dynamic that I think people aren't prepared for. I know in a few states, they have programs where if you're a family member who is taking time off work to care for a sick or elderly relative that is like on the cusp of needing to be sent to like a long-term care facility, the state will reimburse you for the hourly care you provide, because it's way less expensive for them to just pay a family member to help provide care than it is for them to be in a nursing home and for like Medicaid or Medicare to be reimbursing a nursing home. Do you think we should do something like that for like childcare too?
Yeah, we absolutely should. We should do it for all care, period, right? We have to make it easier, not harder. I mean, one, I think like even in workplaces, I should be able to say to my employer, like, my father's 80. I need to take care. You know, I mean, he's having a heart issue. Like, I need to take this time off, and there should be grace for it, and we shouldn't be penalized for it. I think the second thing is, you know, we work on this at Moms First. We have a tool called PaidLeave.ai, because the states that do provide these kinds of benefits and that allow you to take advantage of them, they make it so damn hard to know whether you're eligible that people just give up, right? And so, like, and that's real money. Like, that's like $10,000, you know what I mean, a year, which is meaningful, but like less than, in some places, less than like 10% of people that are eligible take advantage of it because they don't know that it's available to them. So like, this is, again, a conversation about caregiving that we're not having out in the open. It's something that, because of the way I think culturally we've valued caregiving, whether it's children or elderly parents, we've talked about it like, oh, that's something that you have to do by yourself. That's a personal issue. You know what I mean? Not an economic issue. And it really is an economic issue, not a personal issue, that has to be brought to the forefront. So yes, there needs to be legislation. Yes, there needs to be like, you know, corporate policies that are talking about this. And yes, culturally, we have to see this as something we value as a society, that we actually encourage people to do, to allow you to like, you know, I always think about this story that Bill Clinton always says. You know, it was the day after his, you know, last day of presidency, and he was on a plane. And a stewardess came up to him and she said, you know what? I didn't vote for you, but I want to say thank you. She said, a few years ago, both of my parents got ill at the same time. And because of, you know, the policy that you, the FMLA, because you passed that, both of us were able to take care of our parents and see them to their last day and let them die with dignity. And I'll never be able to thank you for that. And it was so powerful because I think that's just like what folks want. Like, I want to be able to take care of my baby when they're little. I want to be able to hold my father's hand in the last few years of his life. Like, and I don't want to have to compromise having to be, you know, lose my job because of it.
I mean, an FMLA is like the bar is so low.
So
like,
low.
It is so, it's crazy to me to think that so prior low. To the Clinton years, there was no leave. None. I think my mom took off like 4 weeks when I was born in the 80s. Like, and it wasn't, I don't think it was paid. Like, it was.
No, like, it's not paid for.
It was just assumed that somebody will
you
drop
just didn't
out of
get
the
fired. That,
yeah.
That was like the gift we were going to give you.
Yeah. It was
you
just
can still have your job when you come back.
Yeah. You can still have your job when you come back, but you don't get paid, but you still get your insurance. Like, that was like the FMLA thing. And that's crazy that it's, I think that people forget how. I was like kind of just like becoming aware politically. I think it was like in elementary school. And I just remember I used to go to this like Christian youth group. I'm not like evangelical Christian, but my best friend was. And I used to go to like her youth group because my Catholic church didn't have one. And they hated Bill Clinton in the Christian youth group. They hated him so much. I remember hearing like the guy in charge of the youth group talking about like he was so mad about like FMLA and he thought that it was just like feminists and people like wanting. And it's like. It's crazy. Like, I think people lose sight of the fact that this was recent that this happened.
Yeah.
And that even when this very bare bones thing that is really, really grossly not enough was first introduced, people were furious about it. They were so mad. Yeah.
About giving people nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm so mad at, like, giving people nothing.
Yeah. It was.
Like, what does that mean? And I'm not sure we're that much. Are we better or worse?
I don't know. I feel like, you know, I've seen the phrase racism is expensive on a lot of in a lot of comment sections since the election. And I think that people in this country are so unwilling to see somebody that they don't like, somebody who's not a member of their in-group getting any kind of benefit, that they're willing to forgo those benefits themselves because they just don't want. They don't want to see somebody browner than them get it, even if they're getting the same thing as that person. They just don't want to see it.
Yeah, I think the other thing is like we think that progress is zero sum. Like we think if someone new enters the room that there's no place left for me. We think if you get something, that means I don't get it. And I think that there was something about one would have thought that the pandemic would have made us come together, but I think the pandemic. In some ways, because like here's this thing, right, that like infected it knew no race. It knew no gender. It knew no sexuality. It was going to infect you regardless. And you would have thought that something like that would have brought us together, but it was quite the opposite. I think it actually made us more bitter, more angry, more distrusting, more insular, both on the left and I think on the right. Right. Like this is, I think, a common trait that we feel like, oh, no, what about me? And I think about this a lot because, you know, my parents came here as refugees, you know, and they came to Chicago, Illinois, like in the 1970s. And like a Catholic church took them in. People gave them clothes and food and a job and support. And now I look at what's happening with Chicago and like the ICE raids. And, but again, you see a sense of community, you know, and there's sparks of it, but I think we got to figure out how we keep that alive.
Yeah. I think it's difficult. I think it was difficult for people during pandemic to feel like they were making sacrifices and then see people who were blatantly just ignoring it and sort of like freeloading on the sacrifices of other people and then being like, well, I'm going to freeload too, you know, or like, or fuck these people. This isn't necessary. I shouldn't have any restrictions on me because if I do it, I'll be fine. You know, like it was strange. I think Chicago and most major cities in America, like major cities, have a sense of community that is lacking in places that are more spread out. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, I lived in Chicago when I was just out of college for like 7 years, and I love that town. And it is there are a lot of problems with it, right? It's very segregated. There's a lot of racism in that town, and racism that people just kind of don't want to talk about it because it's a northern city, and they think that they're too good to talk about it. But it is there. But I think that when anybody comes in and tries to like fuck with a city like Chicago, or like Los Angeles, or like Portland, that then they're like, no, we have a cohesive identity. We actually have like the feeling of being attacked from outside is making people feel a little bit more charitable to each other, which is a fucked up way to get to a point that we should have been during pandemic. But
But listen, I don't care. We get there, right?
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, but that's where we gotta get to. I mean, I write and talk about this a lot now is this idea of like disconnection. Like, I think the biggest problem affecting us isn't like AI or climate. It's like disconnection. Like, we don't talk to each other. And I think you really, really, really see it in gender. You know, the race, you know, gender relations are at an all-time low. The distrust between men and women, the inability, you know what I mean, for us to be there for each other and have empathy for one another. And part of that's because we're not friends. We don't date each other. We don't, you know what I'm saying? There's just that, like, it's so different, Erin, now, you know, in the relationships. And I get it. But I think it's like the only way. I'm at a place in my life where, I don't want to be right. I want to win. I want to win, which means, like, we need a big tent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, bringing it back to women leaving the labor force, something I kind of wanted to touch on is, like, you know, when we talk about leaving the labor force and, like, what the economic impacts are on a family, I think a lot of people— The Center for American Progress put out this calculator that was like the hidden cost of leaving the workforce. And granted, there are other reasons to leave the workforce beyond just like childcare is expensive and most of my paycheck is going to it. Like, but if you're looking at it from a purely economic perspective, leaving the workforce as a woman for any amount of time, if you're not getting paid and your job isn't there when you come back, is like a terrible,
terrible idea.
Economic decision.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the messaging that we're getting is like, wouldn't you like to just stay home and have a soft life and be a trad wife? It just like ignores the fact that like it, the amount of money that you are not earning compounds. Like it's so bad for your family long term. And I think that like the idea that like, oh, well, if your husband makes enough money, then you can just drop out and it'll be totally fine. Like really whitewashes that.
Yeah. And you see that, quite frankly, with divorce, because 50% of marriages will end in divorce. And this is why, and a lot of the laws haven't caught up. Like, you don't get your, if you're at home, you don't get your husband's full Social Security benefits. You get like a third of them. And it's why you have so many elderly women in senior homes that are by themselves, you know, because they're one foot away from poverty. I think like your point is so important because we don't think about the impact of this creates like a generational cycle of poverty. Like if women are already retiring with a third less wealth than men, and like you said, they spend their careers making less than men, right? Then they have to take hits because they had a baby and now they have to take care of their elderly parents, right? So all of that results in less dollars. And so when it comes time for them to be cared for, their daughters are going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to cut back, right, on their labor participation in order to help their mothers. And so you create this vicious cycle that happens over and over and over again. And, you know, it's funny that you talk about the trad. There's a great article that came out, I think, in Newsweek about looking at the trad wife movement in Britain, because yes, I guess there's one there too. You know what I mean? And what they found is that it's not that women are leaving because of nostalgia for traditional roles, that they want to live in a farm and like milk a cow. Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah, because
leaving.
That shit's gross. I grew up on a farm and like anybody who's like, oh, that's going to be so soft. It's like your hands are going to be dirty. You're right. Going to need short fingernails and there's going to be dirt under them. And that's fine. But like, let's be realistic. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, but very, very, very important public service announcement,
yes.
Right? Just for anybody who's listening out there that thinks it's soft, it's not. Right, like, so it's not about that. It's because they're fucking tired. They're tired. Women are tired. They're tired in Britain. They're tired in India. They're tired in Africa. They're tired here in Kansas. Like, we are tired. And we're also tired of like these false choices between work and grind to the bone, or like stay at home and like have no choices. Like give me something in the middle. Like give me control over my time. Stop infantilizing women and allow them to have some control over their time, their choices, and like what they want for them.
Mm-hmm. Give me a commune. That's what I'm going to say. Give me a commune of my good friends. We all live together. You know, I got to pop out for a couple hours because I'm feeling like I'm going to go crazy. Right. Can you watch the girls? Totally. I trust you. You're a mom. You get it. I trust them. They're my friends. Like, let's do that. Let's go back to living in commune type situations.
Yeah. And like, guess what? That's all of India,
We all live in a commune. Like, it's like this, this is how you, you're not meant to take care of a child by yourself. This is not the way that it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and elderly parents shouldn't be all by the, like, I feel like the, I realize that I'm like, I live halfway across the country from my parents. And so if something happened to them, it would be very difficult for me to provide direct care. But like, I worked in a nursing home when I was in high school. And like the number of daughters, like adult daughters who were themselves old women coming in to like hang out with their moms and like provide the socializations that their moms needed. It was just like so much of it is on us.
I know. And I'm terrified that I have two boys. I'm like, you guys are not going to take care of me. Like, what am I going to do? But it's true. It is. Yeah. It is. It is on us, you know? And here's the thing. I'm okay with that because I like to do that. But I don't want to do it in isolation without any support and without any recognition.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty.
Hysteria is brought to you by Ritual. We all want to do the right thing, keep our bodies healthy in the long run, but even if we try really hard to eat kale salads and drink green smoothies, we're still most likely not getting all of the essential nutrients we need daily. Enter Ritual, the obsessively researched multivitamin. Ritual's essential multis have the nutrients most of us don't get enough from food, all in their clean, absorbable forms. No shady additives or ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good.
Erin, I love my Ritual because for years, I mean, look, we all need vitamins. I get my blood work back. It's like, girl, you need more D3. You need more B12. You need more things. But all the old vitamins would give me a stomach ache and you'd have to eat them with food. Not Ritual. Ritual we can take in the morning with coffee, has a nice little minty taste. You don't forget to take it and say, oh, I'm going to take it with my food. And then you leave the house and your vitamins are home.
So taking a vitamin with coffee is a bold endorsement of the vitamin.
It is. It is. And we all know I have a delicate constitution, so.
Absolutely. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus Multi contains 9 key nutrients in 2 delayed-release capsules designed for optimal absorption per day. It's designed to be gentle on the stomach of people with delicate constitutions, with a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking your multis actually enjoyable. Ritual even conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. The results had increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks.
Ritual's Essential third-party tested for heavy metals and Clean Label Project certified, so you know you can trust what you're putting in your body. It's HSA, FSA eligible with a seamless checkout experience, so you can save when you shop with pre-tax dollars. Instead of striving for perfect health, aim for supporting foundational health. Get 25% off your first month only at ritual.com/hysteria. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 and over to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/hysteria for 25% off.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know the difference between mom of boys and boy moms. Because this story is, to me, I think we got to put this woman in the Italian-American Boy Mom Hall of Fame. Paul Ingrassia was Trump's pick to lead the Office of Special Counsel. He's 30, and he looks like he was ridden hard and put away wet. In a recent leaked group chat, he claimed to have a Nazi streak and openly admires Nick Fuentes, and his professional experience includes serving on Andrew Tate's legal team. Just a real dreamboat overall. Now, reports came out yesterday that back in June, his mommy, Donna Ingrassia, showed up to the top Democrats on the Judiciary and Oversight Committee's representatives Jamie Raskin and Robert Garcia's offices to confront them and vouch for her son. He's a good boy. He's a good boy. Paulie's a good boy. Anyway, that is like epic boy mom behavior to
me. Oh, my God. It is epic boy mom behavior. I swear I'm not going to be like that.
I mean, I'm sure, like, as a mother of boys, have you ever, like, been talking to another mom that also has boys and she's, like, talking to you, like, using, like, coded boy mom language and you're sort of like, no, we're not the same?
No, like, totally. I feel that way about my sister sometimes. I was like, I don't know. You know? Yeah.
I do.
I mean, I cried when I found out I was having boys. I was like, anything but boys, please. Like, for years, I just didn't even open up. I'm like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Like, let me focus on the girls. Yes.
Yeah. I got to say, it's funny. Like I said, I've got two girls. And, like, when I'm out in public with them or we're at a playground, the difference in behavior between there's always like four bad boys at the playground, and then there's like a bunch of like okay boys, but the bad boys are influencing the okay boys and making them worse, and the girls are just like playing by themselves and being
but they know everything. It's so funny, like every time I'm like in Sean's classroom and just watch, I love to watch like the gender dynamics, it's really remarkable that like women don't rule the world, meaning like, you know, that is like a conspiracy against us because we are far more qualified. Yeah. And it's like that talent is like demonstrated at age like four. Yeah. Like you see it. They're just smarter. They're more disciplined.
Yeah.
I would have
liked to have the opportunity to like have a son. I'm glad I have two girls because sisters are very special and I love them both and whatever. But like, you know, when I found out I was having a second girl, there was a part of me that was like, oh, I'm never going to have a boy. And I wonder what that would have been like. And now I'm kind of like feeling good about the fact that I don't ever have, there's no risk of me becoming a boy mom.
The shop's closed. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, yeah. It's shut down.
We
installed a security system.
Got it. Yeah. Very smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. I couldn't squeeze anything out of this anyway. But you know, here's the thing. I will say this. I do love being a mom. I wish I had a daughter too, but the shop is dead. I do love being a boy mom because let me tell you something, like they love the shit out of me. Like I am like a goddess, a princess, the best thing ever. And this is why I think it's like, I'm so focused on what's happening culturally. Cause I'm like, oh no, you don't get to have them. Like I have raised good fucking boys, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, who are like in this fight with me, and I am not going to turn them over to the evil corners of the internet.
Good. We need more boy moms like you. Moms of boys. Sorry, not boy moms. Moms of boys. All right. Before we get to Sandy Petty, some announcements for the class. In our unrelenting media ecosystem, the news moves so quickly, it can feel like we're watching our country whiz past us. The car is moving so fast, we can't possibly see the individuals being left behind or worse, run over. On her new podcast, Runaway Country, veteran journalist Alex Wagner talks to the voices at the center of the headlines, from the fringes of the resistance to the marrow of MAGA to the many people who found themselves smack dab in the middle of a fight they never asked for. Because if you want to understand our unreal times, you've got to talk to the very real people who are experiencing it all firsthand. Join Alex as she brings together the stories of everyday Americans trapped in our national car with no brakes, alongside conversations with some of the smartest thinkers in politics. Buckle up, this road could lead anywhere. Tune in to Runaway Country with Alex Wagner every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts, or subscribe on YouTube. Crooked Con is just over 2 weeks away. I cannot believe that. That is not very many weeks away. As many of you have heard, there are a ton of new speakers added to the November 7th lineup. Adam Mockler, Tim Miller, Pramila Jayapal, Jen Psaki, Simone Sanders Townsend. But we have a Hysteria exclusive for you all, a sneak peek of the schedule, in addition to our Hysteria Live podcast. Yay! I'll be leading a discussion on how we grow a progressive media ecosystem with Tara McGowan, Stephanie Valencia, and Jessica Valenti. And Alyssa will be leading a panel about how Democrats can win everywhere with Representative Sarah McBride, Representative Janelle Bynum, North Carolina's Anderson Clayton, and Wisconsin's Ben Wickler. We'll be releasing the full schedule in the coming days, so keep an eye out for that and be sure to grab tickets if you haven't already at crookedcon.com. There aren't many left. The holidays are around the corner, and we're excited for gathering, baking, and our favorite tradition, participating in the unhinged discourse about Santa. Just in time, the Crooked Store brought back the fan favorite Santa is a Woman crew neck sweatshirts and long sleeve tees, this time in festive new colors. Grab one to wear to your next holiday party or at your family Christmas, or if you're like me, just wear it at all times of the year and get laughs. People just always compliment my shirt when I wear it in the middle of summer. Christmas, of course, definitely organized by a woman because a man has never been thoughtful enough to get every sibling the perfect gift, let alone the whole world. Pick one up now at crooked.com/store. Time for Sandy Petty. Reshma, Are you feeling sane, or do you have something you're feeling petty about this week?
I'm feeling sane. So look, I just came off of a family vacation. My dad's dream was to go to Italy. So my sister and I and my little one, we took him to Italy for 6 days.
Ooh.
And I was dreading it, right? Because I don't know about you, but like, I'm about to turn 50, but like when I'm with my sister and my parents, we might as well as be 10. We get into the same petty fights, the same sibling rivalry. We're like constantly fighting for like who's the best daughter, et cetera. And I was just so proud because like we made it through 6 days in Italy, taking 2 80-year-old people like to the Vatican and a 5-year-old. Like there was no tantrums. Like we made it, and like we didn't get into any fights. And you just realize like with the world like falling apart, like the most important thing is family. It always is and always should be.
Mm-hmm. Wow, zero fights. That's
zero.
So
we all, a baby one on the way to the airport, like on the last day, because I started getting feeling like my sister was getting a little more love about something because she always does because she is the favorite. But I controlled myself.
That's great. That's so impressive. What part of Italy did you go to?
We went to Venice, Florence, and Rome.
Oh, wow. You hit the big three.
It was special. Well, I also think like at this stage in my parent, like you don't know how much more time you have. And so like having and, you know, taking that opportunity of like getting out of the country if you can, or I don't know, the Grand Canyon, just getting out, not with your spouses and just having that alone time. Like it was just like, so I feel like no matter what happens, like we had this and we have the photos and we have the memories and it was really beautiful. My dad was so happy.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's so lovely. Well, I've got a petty.
Okay.
I've got a petty. I love going to a museum. I love museums. Even a kid's science museum, that's why I turn into a kid in a kid's science museum. It's like, you mean if I turn the crank, I can see a demonstration of like, you know, the way an airplane wing works? You know, like I love that stuff. I was recently at a big museum here in Los Angeles, and to my dismay, so many exhibits are like screen-based now, where like rather than like pulling a knob or like turning a wheel or whatever, it's like a touch screen.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Like, and I know that it's probably more economical for a museum and easier to like change the exhibit. But like I went to this cat's exhibit and like I was with my 4-year-old and she thought it was really cool because there were some like taxidermy, you know, like cheetahs and whatever. And there was also like a video of like lions attacking a gazelle. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. I didn't know that she was going to have that lesson about the nature of life today, but okay. But so much of it was just like, learn how cat claws work. And you would like click buttons on a screen. Like, I don't want a screen. I want a 3D mold of it so I can like physically touch it and look at how big it is. I don't want like a picture. I don't want a screen. Like, we're going to the museum to not look at screens.
Right. I want to touch the claw.
I want to touch the claw. I want to read a sign that is like one of those old school museum signs.
Yeah.
And like, I want to read, you know, and I know that it's probably like, I understand why museums would rely more on screens. They're probably just way easier to handle and like deal with and uninstall and reinstall and switch things up, whatever. But like, no.
I want an analog museum.
I want an analog museum. I like an analog heist. I want analog everything. When it comes to old buildings with columns, I don't want screens in there.
I love it. I felt this way about like even like I wrote a piece, but it's like, I don't know about you, but like I'm like, why do not send me another app about Google Classroom or another thing I need, a Class Dojo or what I need to log on. Just put it in the backpack. You know what I mean? On a piece of paper. Like, give me analog. Analog needs to come back. Maybe that's what I'm going to be for Halloween, analog.
Analog? That's a good idea. That's a good idea. I have a list of Halloween decorations that I can't use this year. Do you want to hear some of them?
Please, I do.
Okay, they're all really dumb. Okay, Mothman Randy Savage. So that combines the Mothman monster and the wrestler, Macho Man Randy Savage. Werewolf Blitzer. It's Wolf Blitzer, but he's a werewolf.
Yes.
Marjorie Taylor Swift.
Oh, I like that.
Randy Jackson Pollock. Draculaura Bush, Draculana Del Rey, Draculaurence O'Donnell. No, there's a lot of Draculas. Marjorie Taylor Thomas. That's Marjorie Taylor Greene.
She's really making an appearance.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So that's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but a Sith Lord. Justin Timberwolfe, Anne Frankenstein, and Hillbilly Eilish.
Love it.
Yeah.
So creative.
So those are some free Halloween costume ideas for people that are that have those assorted items in their possession and need something last minute. And Frankenstein might be a tough one to pull off this year.
I'm going to be Rumi from K-pop Demon Hunters.
Did you figure out how to do the hair?
No, I just got a wig that came from Amazon. But I also got like a short mini skirt and a half top, which I'm like, great, this is going to be fun.
That's awesome. The kids are going to love it. The adults are going to love it. Everybody's going to be dressed up like that character this year.
Well, the whole family is basically K-pop Demon Hunters, including the dog.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. We're being the Ghostbusters, and the baby's going to be Slimer.
So I love that.
Yeah, I will show you a picture when we're done recording, because we did dress her up for like this Halloween event at a garden lately, or like last weekend, and she looked very cute.
Do baby Halloween costumes. But I made Sean 1 year basically be Ruth Bader Ginsburg with me. It was really great because, you know, he's like 3, so it's like he can't protest. So it was awesome.
Oh, that's so cute. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Reshma Soojani, thank you so much for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Great stint as a guest host. Please come back again. Listeners, if you want to get in touch with us, hysteria@crooked.com, and there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Mastermonico is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. Kendra James is our executive producer of culture and entertainment. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.